always think this is me. But of course one can ask, if I am my body, which body am I? The body of the 3-year-old, the body of the 7-year-old, the body of the 20-year-old, the 30-year-old, the 50-year-old? Which body am I if I'm my body? Because we were all those bodies, if we are our bodies. And actually, what Krishna says is we are none of those bodies. We are something completely different from the body. We are souls, we are eternal. We are parts and parcels, we are individuals. We are eternally individuals. And rather than having a relationship with the body, we have a relationship with Krishna. That's what Krishna wants to say. But the basic principle of this jnana, this knowledge, and this is the beginning of knowledge, is the body is not me. That I am a tiny soul. This is how Krishna also begins speaking to Srila Rupa Goswami. He explains that we are tiny souls and of Krishna's Jiva Shakti. Vishnu Shakti Paraprokta Chaitra Gya Kyakta Tapara. That we are superior energy. The material energy is different from the superior energy. The material energy is always changing and shifting. Or the superior energy, Parashakti, is eternal, and we are of that eternal energy, but Tatastha Shakti, marginal, small parts and parcels. And we are eternally ourselves. This is who we are. But we are not this. This is not us. So this jnana was explained to Krishna as the process of elevation, by Krishna to Arjuna as the process of elevation. And as a process of a realization that would inspire Arjuna to fight, since we are not our bodies, and neither is Bhishma or Drona or any of the other warriors who are going to die, they are not their bodies, so there is no death for the soul, there is death for the body, and death for the body is unavoidable. You cannot stop it, and death for the soul is impossible. So therefore you should do your duty and fight. So that was the basic point of the first section. Then, so when you're thinking about understanding that you're not your body, you won't be acting, because you're just understanding. There's no action attached to that. So jnana yoga, the attempt to separate oneself and one's consciousness from one's body, to purify one's sense of who we are, is jnana. Tends to be inactive. And those who practice jnana yoga, they are noted for their renunciation. And in fact, they don't want to engage in any activity, because activity means karma. If you engage in activity, you'll get some results. So they don't want to get any results. So true jnana yogis are renounced. They don't do anything of this world, and they have. It's quite an amazing situation, actually. They can live anywhere. They don't need anything on the material level. You know, they can sleep anywhere. They find that some food will come to them. So they're really free. These renunciant sadhus, they're really free on a particular level. They're free from the same type of burdens and anxieties that those who are just working hard trying to accumulate material wealth to find happiness in that way. So these people have decided that rather than being the cause of happiness, these accoutrements of the things that we add, they cause us bondage and misery. So rather than identifying with anything else, they simply identify with themselves as eternal spiritual entities. So then the next section began, which was a short section where Krishna told Arjuna to fight so he could gain the heavenly kingdom, so he could avoid infamy of having run from the battlefield. So to gain something on the material level, or to avoid losing something on the material level, these were the motivations that Krishna was speaking to in this section. second philosophical section. Now, Krishna's going to speak to about more of that starting now, but from a different point of view. So just let's remember that the first point was we're not our bodies, which is jnan, which tends to be inactive materially, or inactive physically. And the second one is to fight or to act so that you gain something and avoid losing something. Now, what Krishna's going to start explaining now is a combination of these two methods. Because on the jnana method, there's no activity. And on the karma side, and there's activity, but entanglement. So which is better? And Krishna says, well, neither of them really are what we want. We want to combine the best of both of them. To work, to perform jnana, but on the, excuse me, to work to perform karma, but on the jnana, with jnana consciousness. Detached consciousness, and that's what he's going to talk about. So he will begin here. Thus far, 39, I think we're up to this now, 39. Thus far, I have described this knowledge to you through analytical study. That means through this jnana yoga, sankhya. Sankhya and jnana are basically the same. Sankhya means to count. Literally, it means to count. So to count the material elements, they're analyzing, those who are practicing Sankhya Yoga, they analyze the material elements, they analyze the material world, and they come up with 24 different elements, or 25, or different, sometimes, depending upon how you calculate it, and there's different numbers of elements, and then they find the soul is a separate element. And the super soul is still another separate element. So what they're trying to do in Sankhya Yoga is the same thing basically as Jnana Yoga, is live a detached life and separate oneself and one's consciousness from the material elements. Very intellectual also. So Krishna says, Eshate abhita sankhya buddha yoga trimam srinu. Here for me, Thus far I have described this knowledge to you through analytical study. Come on, let me move this a little closer. I guess otherwise what are they called? Tassels. They just like shake. Now they're all shaking on everyone else. I've described to you this knowledge, how to advance through analytical study, Sankhya Jnana. Now listen, Srinu, as I explain it in terms of working without fruit of results. So to work on the detached or Jnana level, karma on the Jnana level is what Krishna is going to describe. And he calls it here Buddhi Yoga, means the yoga of intelligence. When you act, O son of Prita, when you act in such knowledge, you can free yourself from the bondage of work. So acting in knowledge, not just acting without knowledge, and not just knowledge without acting. Combine the two. That's what Chris is going to talk about. And he calls it Buddhi over here. Now there is a, now in Prabhupada's translations, he usually translates Buddhi Yoga as devotional service. Literally, it means the yoga of intelligence. Now, why does Prabhupada translate it as devotional service? Because this is the ultimate action with the perfected intelligence, knowing oneself to be Krishna's servant and acting for Krishna's pleasure. And that Buddhi Yoga is described in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, in the 10th verse, where Krishna, so this is explaining why Prabhupada translates Buddhi Yoga as devotional service. which is Krishna says in the 10th chapter, Tesham Satata Yuktanam, to those who are always Yuktanam, engaged, and to those who are always engaged or acting, Bhajatam Priti Purvakam. Bhajatam means serving me with Priti Purvakam, filled with great affection. Bhajatam Priti Purvakam. Tesham Satata Yuktanam. Satata means always. Those who are always serving me with great affection. How does Krishna reciprocate with them? Dadami, I give Buddhi Yogam Tvam. I give to them, Tvam. I give to them Buddhi Yoga. There's the word Buddhi Yoga. And then Yenam Am Upayantite. And by this Buddhi Yoga, they come to me. So Krishna is saying that they worshipping me with devotion, I give them the ultimate intelligence, which is bhakti, by which they come to me, because bhakti is the only way that one can come to Krishna. Through jnana, one can become liberated. Through karma, one can go to the heavenly planets. But it is by devotional service, by serving Krishna in such a way that he is pleased, with affection, not even duty, but with affection, trying to please Krishna, with love for Krishna. Then Krishna is pleased, and by Krishna's grace, he gives them the understanding by which they can come to him. He gives them everything by which they can come to him. So that is the only way to actually approach Krishna, through bhakti. Krishna says this in the 11th chapter, in the 9th chapter, 18th chapter, I think, as well. Bhakti mam nabhijananti yadanyasyasmi tatsata. By bhakti, only one can come to me. Only by bhakti yoga. Only by devotion. In the Bhagavatam, in the first canto, Vedanti tattva vigyas tattva mizganam adayam brahmaiti paramatmakti bhagavaniti sabyate. That there's one absolute truth, and that absolute truth is realized or understood according to the methodology of approach. The method by which we approach that adhaya jnana will, the difference in methodologies will give us different realization of what that absolute truth is. Just like there's a government. And if we approach the government in a criminal way or a revolutionary way, we'll have one feeling about the government. And if we approach as a model citizen, we'll have a different feeling about the government. So it's the same government, but the government has different facets or aspects. And it's our mentality that causes the differences in vision that we have. So that mentality is shaped by the process we use. So in bhakti, the mentality one is one of affection for Krishna and wanting to please him, of being attracted to him, being ultimately in love with him. And then Krishna reciprocates by revealing himself in his personal form. So that's why Prabhupada translates it Buddhi Yoga as Bhakti Yoga, because that is the methodology that Krishna gives when one is worshipping him. And by that methodology, which is only Bhakti Yoga, one can come to him. So, going back to the second chapter, in the verse also Prabhupada, in the 10th chapter, Prabhupada says in the purport, the word Buddhi Yoga is very significant. We remember that in the second chapter, the Lord instructing Arjuna said that he had spoken to him of many things and he would now instruct him in the way of Buddhi Yoga. Now Buddhi Yoga is explained. Buddhi Yoga itself is action in Krishna consciousness. That is the highest intelligence. It is the most refined intelligence. Because by that intelligence we can see the soul of all souls everywhere we look. So that is a very fine, that is the best of intelligences, because you're getting the material world through a material body, and both are temporary. You're getting the greatest benefit from something temporary. It's like trading. If you have one of those Aussie $2 pieces, what are they made out of? Not copper, but it's an alloy. What are they made out of? Bronze of some kind. It looks, do you know? Not brass and not copper, but a mixture. Yes, it's some kind of metal. Well, so if we can take that one kind of metal and trade it for a Mercedes Benz, that's pretty good, isn't it? One little of those coins. So because one is worthless and the other is so also worthless, but in a different way. But in the example, it's worth so much. So if we can trade the little that we have in the material world and the material conscious, and the material body, we're going to lose anyway. If we trade that for the greatest thing, it is most intelligent, the greatest deal. So, Krishna continues here explaining to Arjuna. Now he's explaining about this path. It's quite interesting. He says, in this endeavor, what endeavor? The endeavor of Buddha Yoga, the endeavor of working karma on the jnana platform, on the platform of knowledge. In this endeavor, there is no loss or diminution. What does diminution mean? Lessening or reduction. So you can't, there's no loss or diminution. That means what you gain never gets less. And a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. What's the most dangerous type of fear? Huh? Yeah. One time I was in Christchurch, New Zealand, and I asked the devotees, what is the greatest fear? And one devotee raised his hand and said, to become a teenager again. Sorry, no offense. He's serious, too. Guess he's a wild teenager. So this endeavor is so powerful. There is never any loss, no lessening, and a little advancement is so powerful that it protects you. And it's a little advancement. Alpa apyasya dharmasya. A little advancement in this dharma. Trayate releases one. Mahate bayat. From the greatest mahate, the greatest mahat, bhaya, fear. So that's it's attractive. So when Krishna speaks in this way, if someone says to you, I'm going to tell you a secret here, that's going to, even if you understand it the smallest bit, it's going to remove all your anxiety. Would you like to hear that? So, yeah, when Krishna's, he's explaining it in such a way that naturally Arjuna, and we who are trying to follow the example of Arjuna, naturally our attention perks up. It's so powerful. And Prabhupada says in his purport, activity in Krishna consciousness or acting for the benefit of Krishna without expectations of sense gratification is the highest transcendental quality of work. So this is what's going to be explained. This Buddhi Yoga, or Bhakti Yoga, or devotional service, or knowledge, or work on the platform of knowledge. So what is knowledge again? So there's different levels of knowledge. The first level of knowledge is we're not our body, and we can act in a detached way based on that level of knowledge, or we can act in a detached from the fruits of one's work way on a higher level of knowledge, which would be that I am Krishna's servant. And actually loving that position. I am Krishna's servant, and let me do something, let me do my service in such a way that Krishna is so pleased. So this is the way of the lovers of Krishna, those who love Krishna actually work in this consciousness. Let me do this in such a way, whether it's sweeping the floor or making a dressing the deities, or planting a garden for Krishna, or whatever, in such a way, or offering the incense, just doing it in such a way that Krishna really is happy with it, and or singing his names, because say if we're engaging in kirtan, there are so many different ways we can do it. But the best way is to chant in such a way, in the mood, in the consciousness, with the consciousness, oh, let Krishna be pleased. Let me chant in such a way, with such affection and expertise, that Krishna will be pleased. Now, he explains in the next verse, Krishna is explaining, in text 41, a very famous verse, Vyavya Satmika Buddhi. 40 was also very famous too. Vyavya Satmika Buddhi. That means resolute. Buddhi means intelligence. When one's intelligence is resolute, firmly fixed, ekehar, one, like a laser. Vyavya Satmika Buddhi, one's intelligence is pointed on the pleasure of Krishna. Because again, we've been talking about buddhi, intelligence. So to have one's intelligence just focused on pleasing Krishna, ekeha, just on that one thing, in this world, kurunandana, not, and the opposite of that is bahu shaka. Bahu means many, and shaka means branches. Bahu shaka tvanantasya. Many, endless number of branches. I want this, I want that, I want to do that. Just jumping all over the place like the mind does. Is like a monkey. Jumping from branch to branch to branch to branch. So that's bahu shaka. Hyanantasya. Bhudeo abhyasayinam. So those who are not Krishna conscious, those who are not fixed, those who are not truly devotional, who are not on this path, their mind will be focused on so many different things, one after the next, after the next, after the next, after the next. And on the other hand, the actual practitioners of Krishna consciousness, of devotional service, of Buddhiola, they're focused. They don't see left, they don't see right. They just see one thing. You know that famous story from the Mahabharata of Dronacharya, who was the great teacher of the martial arts, military arts, to the Pandavas. Even though he was a Brahmin is a teacher, but he was teaching the art of war to the warriors. He was expert. So in an archery lesson, he told all the different Pandava students to focus on hitting a bird in a faraway tree, and then the first one, I don't remember who the first one was shooting, and Dronacharya said, "You're focused? Yes. What do you see?" "I see the tree branch, I see the sky, I see the clouds, I see the sun, and I see the bird. Shoot! It missed the bird. Then the next Pandava, what do you see? Take aim, what do you see? I see the branches, I see the bird sitting on the branches, I see the leaves. Shoot! Missed. Arjun, your turn. Hit the bird. What do you see, Arjun? I see the eye of the bird only. Shoot! And he hit it. You know that story? I can't even say anything that you don't know. What am I going to do? Tomorrow you give that. Okay? So you watched all the Mahabharata videos?
I've not watched that.
But you saw that one. How did you know that story?
I've seen it for you.
From where?
Cartoons.
That's what we're competing with. In the old days, see, grandmothers used to tell all the stories of Ramayana and Mahabharata to their grandchildren. And now there's no need for grandmothers, because we have cartoons. Grandmothers are all in the Centrelink office. Nothing to do. Was it dramatic?
I don't know, possibly.
You have a good memory. You were a baby. What do you mean?
A bit bigger than a baby.
Well, what do you mean, you were a baby?
I was a child.
But you were a child. So who is you?
Sorry, I'm still a test.
But isn't it funny? That's how we think, yeah? But how could you be, if you were a baby, then what are you now? Only in your mother's eyes. But now you're not a baby. You're a young, you're a teenager. Okay, you're a baby. Go on to the philosophy. So those who are on this path, they are resolute in purpose and their aim is one. They want to please Krishna. It sounds very easy, but this is what it means to be on the path of Krishna consciousness. Bahushaka, not to be bahushaka, many branched, many tanantas, the endless number of I want this and I want that. No focus. If we don't have focus, what do we get? We don't get very much. Just like, say if I'm walking from here, I decide I want to walk from here to even nearby Elton Library. So I walk out the door and I walk to the left. And then I think, maybe I'll go to the park. And I walk back. And then when I'm halfway to the park, I think, maybe I'll go down this street and see what this street is like, and then I turn around that way. Oh, maybe I'll go back to the house, and then I go back to the halfway back. I was supposed to go to the library, and I stopped to the library. Well, maybe I should stop in the Woolworth. Maybe I should go. That's why you don't get anywhere. I didn't mean you. I just meant if one has this type of unfocused mentality, one doesn't get the result, one never gets anywhere. But if one really wants that goal and nothing else, then one, nothing can stop such a person who is Vyafya Sadmika Bhuti, because he doesn't want anything else. He only wants to please Krishna. And such a person, Samahatma Sadhulabha, is very rare actually. He's made up his mind, I don't want anything of this world. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has said that if one has actually decided, I don't want anything in this world, he has taken the greatest step forward. Nothing in this world could make me happy. No situation. Brahma Bhuvana Loka, from the highest place to the lowest place. But there is nothing. Not even liberation. I don't want any of that. I just want to serve you, Krishna. That's vyavyasatmika, focused consciousness. Prabhupada in his purport quotes a very important verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Shraddha sabde vishvas kore subhritti nischoy Krishna bhakti koila sava karma krita hoy. That defining what shraddha means, faith, what does it mean? It means when you actually accept that all my purposes will be served just by engaging in Krishna service, that is called faith. So vyavyasamika bhuti. Then he says, now the opposite of the focus, the many branch, those who perform their Vedic duties, but wanting some result. Men of small knowledge, this is 42 and 43. Do you know you're going to be 42 and 43 one day? Probably.
Sure.
Well, not necessarily. There are people who leave this world at 24. I mean, not you won't, but I mean, it's not necessary that I'll be 42 and 43. I went to the ocean a couple of days ago, and there was this one. There was a sign by the ocean for someone, Matthew, and it said, you know, in the memory of Matthew, 19 something to 20. Or four, so, and he was only 24 years old or something, and he left. I guess he was attached to the ocean. Just a little sign in memory, and the Australian version of flowers in memorial, the plastic ones. Yeah. Men of small knowledge are very attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruitive activities for elevation to heavenly planets. So what kind of people are performing the Vedic formulas to gain elevation to the heavenly planets, result in good birth, power, and so forth? What kind of people? Men of small knowledge, yes. Avipaschitaha, men with a poor fund of knowledge, they're called Veda Vadarata. They're supposed followers of the Vedas. And they say, so they are very attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruitive activities for elevation to the heavenly planets, result in good birth, power, and so forth. And being desirous of sense gratification and opulent life, they say there is nothing more than this. So here's the mention of the Vedas, which is in what Krishna is saying is that this is not the way we should be, because he's talking about detached work. Work on the basis of knowledge, karma on the basis of jnana. And if we advance on that path, we are greatly benefited. And if we're on this path of trying to achieve temporary results through the Vedic knowledge, then we are considered not very wise. This is called karma kanda. In the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence, these are the people who are following the Vedas for this reason, and who are bewildered. They lack knowledge, they lack detachment, and they're bewildered by such things. What are they bewildered by? They're too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence. It's bewildering. This is what Maya does. Maya is the bewildering potency, the three modes of material nature and the material elements and configuration of the material elements based on the three modes of material nature, it convinces us that I want this. I want to enjoy this. Purusha Prakriti Stohi, the soul who's situated in the material energy, Bhunte Prakriti Dhaniya, is trying to enjoy the things produced of the material energy. Karanam Guna Sangha Syabri, and then he becomes attached to the modes of nature because of his tendency to want to enjoy, to bewildered. Why is it called bewildered? It's because he's eternal, an eternal soul, and these things are made of a completely different substance. The material energy and the eternal soul are different, and therefore they're incompatible. One cannot enjoy. So, but yet the Vedas teach us that if you perform this sacrifice and that sacrifice and this ritual and you do your duties, then you'll attain heavenly planets and heavenly enjoyments. But that's not the purpose of the Vedas, Krishna is saying. Rather, the people who are bewildered due to their attachment to material pleasures, they think there is nothing more than this. Did you ever meet anyone who thought like that, that there was nothing more than trying to enjoy themselves in the material world? You actually met someone like that? Yeah? Where? In Australia? Everywhere. Everywhere. Is there some place where those kind of people aren't there? I think no, the material world is just... That's why everyone is in the material world, because they have this in their mind that there'll be some situation. I might not have found it yet, but if I just move this out of the way and grab that and get a little more of that, I'll find a situation where I can really be satisfied, peaceful, happy, and full of pleasure. So Krishna calls that bewildered, but that's a bewildered state of mind. So it's very embarrassing to hear Krishna speak like this so directly, because then we don't think it's them who's like that. We actually think, bewildered. I know who's really bewildered. It's me. It's not them. It's me. In the minds of those who are too attached, bhoga and aishwarya, to enjoyment of material opulence, prasaktana means attachment, taya parita chetasam, and are bewildered by such things, aparita chetasam, bewildered in their chetana mind, buddhi yogam vyavya satmika buddhi samadhana vidyate. The resolute determination for devotional service does not take place. This buddhi yoga cannot take place in someone who is bahushaka, or many brains. I mean, it's obvious. It's tautologically true. If we cannot be focused, if we're not focused, basically, it's saying, and we cannot be unfocused if we are focused. The Vedas deal mainly with the subject of the three modes of material nature. Trigunya Vishaya Veda. O Arjuna, become transcendental to these three modes. Go beyond the modes, the different forces in the material world that promise you everything but can deliver nothing. Be free from all dualities. I want this, I don't want that. This is a good situation in the material world. This is a bad situation in the material world. And free from anxiety for gain and safety, and be established in the self. This is what you shouldn't do and think, and this is what you should do and think. You should be established in the self. So according to your concept of the self, that how high it is or low it is, you'll have different types of attachments. So if one is attached to the self as just an eternal soul, then one won't be attached to the soul as the enjoyer of the material world, and he will be free from the dualities of the material world, of gain and safety on the material level. He'll be free from that when he knows he's a soul, because the soul cannot be burnt or dried or withered by the wind, etc. What can he gain in the material world? What can he lose in the material world? So Krishna is saying, be established in the soul, the self, and who you are. And of course, the highest understanding of the soul is that I am Krishna's eternally. Not only am I eternal, but I'm eternally Krishna's. And not only eternally Krishna's servant, loving servant, devotional servant, devoted servant. I am Krishna's and Krishna's mine. So don't use the Vedas to gain material benefit. Don't use the karma, the work in the Vedas, to gain something on the material level. Be detached. All purposes served by a small well can at once be served by a great reservoir of water. So in the Indian villages, there'd be one well that was used for washing clothes. There'd be another well used for drinking water, and another well used for washing pots and plates and dishes in the village. So there'd be many wells. But if there is a big lake, big river or lake, a great reservoir of water, all the purposes of the many wells can be served by that one great reservoir of water. So that's the example that Krishna is giving here. So he says, all purposes served by a small well can at once be served by a great reservoir of water. Similarly, all the purposes of the Vedas can be served to one who knows the purpose behind them. The purpose behind the Vedas is to elevate one past fruitive activities meant for material level pleasures. That's the purpose of the Vedas. So someone who knows the purpose of the Vedas automatically doesn't have to go through these lesser purposes. So then now Krishna will speak the positive of what you should do. Up to this point, he's basically said what you shouldn't do. He says, a very famous verse, Kamani evidikaraste mapale sukadatana makamapala hitu bur matisango astakamani. You have a right to perform your prescribed duties. That means you should do your duty. You should do your prescribed duty, you should do your work. But you are not entitled to the fruits of action. This is such a radical proposal, that you work, but you don't take the fruit that naturally comes to you for that work and work just to get that fruit. Because that's why people work. I mean, if they stop giving out, if the government, to all the government workers, saying you have a right to, you should perform your prescribed duties and go to the office, but you are not entitled to the fruits of your work. You're not, in other words, we're not going to pay you. Then no one would show up. Because there's no motivation to work unless there is fruits of the work. But the fruit of the work that Krishna is talking about is on another level that comes. Because one who works but doesn't take the fruits of his work for himself, but uses it for Krishna, is working for Krishna, and he gets eternal fruits. So, kamana eva adhikaraste, your adhikari, eva adhikari, your qualification is to work. But Mapaleshuka, that's enough. Because Arjuna had been thinking, all my work, I'm going to be fighting, and this result will come, and I won't be, and our spoils will be tainted with blood, I won't be able to enjoy the kingdom because of all the people who will be killed. All these considerations, gain and loss, Krishna says, forget it. Just do your duty. You have a right to do your duty. You should do your duty. This is your, you're qualified. You have the adhikara to do your duty, but you should not accept the results. Makama phala hetur bor. You are not the cause of the results of your actions, your activities. Karma phala, the fruit of your karma is hetur, the cause. You are not the cause of it. So different from the way people think. People think it all depends on me. But obviously, if it all depended on me, on everyone, what they got, then there would only be billionaires. Because that's what everyone wants. To be unlimitedly wealthy. Etc. Nate sango stakarmani. And you should not be attached to doing your duty. So look what Krishna is saying. So do your duty, but not take the fruit of your work. Not be attached to the fruit of your work. And you should not think that you are the one causing the fruit to come. And also, should be not attached to not doing your duty. And this type of mood of those things, perform your duty equipoise. It means just focus, not to get the result, but just because it's your duty. Perform your duty equipoised, regardless of happiness or distress, regardless of success or failure. Equipoised mind. Perform your duty equipoised, Arjuna, abandoning all attachment to success or failure. Such equanimity of mind. Equanimity is called yoga. So this is the Buddha yoga that Krishna is talking about. What do you think of this? What do you think? Detached, dutiful work.
Yeah,
you know, just like if you put money in the stock market, for example, okay, and when your stocks go up, oh, so elated, and you know, and then the stocks go down, and oh, so miserable. And then they go up half the amount, but maybe it'll go up more. And then they go down a little bit. And it's just always complete anxiety because you're attached to something that's completely out of your control. So that's like the epitome of material consciousness in that way, what it's like. Just up and down and up and down and up and down. Due to attachment to things that are going by their own power, and we actually have nothing to do with them. So it's that attachment that Krishna is criticizing as being detrimental for the soul. And that's just what the problem is we're attached to the material world due to the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance. And because of the attachment, we're entangled. Because we think of ourselves the enjoyer of the fruits of our work, and therefore we suffer. We suffer being happy, we suffer being miserable, because the elation that comes when the stocks go up is just a different kind of misery, even in its elation form, because it's so unpeaceful. And what goes up must come down. Do you hear that expression? So it's always up and down, and up and down, and up and down. So to be detached from the ups and downs, and to focus one's mind in knowledge, especially knowledge that we are Krishna's servant, this is yoga. And still work. This is the activities that will connect us to the Supreme Lord. Zarena yavaram karma buddhiyogam dhanandaya. So this is this buddhi yoga, this is what Krishna is describing here. The process of detached work. Durena yavaram karma buddhi yogam dhananjaya. So the karmakanda section, the verses in the karmakanda section of the Vedas where they stop and it really becomes yoga if one is working in a detached way. Durena, from a far distance, dur, avaram karma, this karma activity, the attached karma activity, durena, leave it at a far distance. Buddhi yoga, on the strength of your intelligence or your Krishna consciousness, on the strength of knowing that you're an eternal soul and that you're a Krishna servant, on the strength of knowing that you can't, there's no situation in the material world that can please you, that bring pleasure to the soul, on the strength of this Dhananjaya, O conqueror of wealth. Buddha, in such consciousness, Saranam, and Vitra, try for this surrendered consciousness. Instead of the detached surrendered consciousness, instead of kripana falahetava, those desiring the fruit of their work, they are misers. Because the fruit that you end up getting from this attached work, is death and rebirth. That's the actual fruit you end up getting, even though dreaming that you'll get something very, very tasty, but you end up with a kick in the face by death. Mūri yukto jahatya uve sukritka duskrite tasma yogaya yusvasva yoga kamasu kosanam. A man engaged in devotional service in this buddhi yoga, he rids himself. In other words, if he's performing detached work, doing his duty, acting properly, but not doing it to just gain and enjoy this world. A man engaged in devotional service in this buddhi yoga, he rids himself of both good and bad actions, even in this life. He's detached.
Can I ask a question?
Which verse? 50.
I didn't finish it. So I was wondering, a man engaged in devotional service, is that someone who's fully engaged as in a brahmachari, or would that be just a household or an ordinary?
No, he's talking about consciousness of doing
so
your. Because it says buddhi, the Sanskrit is buddhi yukto. When you engage in your prescribed duties in a detached consciousness from the fruit of one's work, or still higher buddhi is when you engage in your work in the consciousness, I am Krishna's servant, let me do it for his pleasure. This is what he's talking about.
Could be somebody who's performing apparently worldly activities, maybe raising children,
but his consciousness is not worldly. Worldly means that I'm trying to enjoy the world. That's what worldly means. But he's otherworldly. He's trying to serve Krishna. Not of this world, even though he appears to be in this world. That's the whole point that he's talking about. Strive for this yoga. A man engaged in this buddhi yukto, this devotional service, this intelligent, fine-tuned, intelligent act. He's not getting good and bad. He's not getting karma by his work. He's not. That means he's not in the material world, practically speaking. Therefore, he says, strive for yoga. strive for this, which is the art of work, of all work. Strive to use your work to connect you to Krishna rather than to connect you to the three modes of material nature. By thus engaging in this Buddha Yuga, Buddha Yukta, devotional service to the Lord, great sages or devotees free themselves from the results of work in the material world because they have no attachment. So they don't get the results. In this way, they become free from the cycle of birth and death and attain the state beyond all miseries by going back to Godhead. When your intelligence has passed out of the dense forest of delusion, you will become indifferent to all that has been heard and all that is to be heard. So in other words, all the Vedic lures that try to get you to attain through your work material ends, even though they are in Vedic scriptures, you will be indifferent to them because you know the purpose of them. Your mind will have passed out of the dense forest of delusion. And you become indifferent to this because you know the purpose of it. And when your mind is no longer disturbed, this is 53, the final verse that we'll read, by the flowery language of the Vedas, and when it remains fixed in the trance of self-realization, Vyasatmika Buddhi, I am Krishna's servant, let me serve him, let me act to please him, then you will have attained the divine consciousness. This is Tada Yogam Apapsyasi. You will achieve self-realization. Samadau achala. Achala means moving. Achala, not moving, buddhi, not moving intelligence. When you've achieved that, you're in divine intelligence. When your consciousness is firmly fixed on Krishna, vyavya satmika buddhi. It's achalam, not moving. It's wonderful, yes? And the mind does not quiver and shake and jump from here to here, not bahushaka, but vyavya sadmika buddhi. Okay, that was 50. So when one has this, I'll read from Prabhupada's purport here. In Krishna consciousness, one comes directly into the communion with Krishna. He contacts, by this focused consciousness, he directly contacts Krishna. And thus, all direction from Krishna may be understood in that transcendental state. And that's the Dhammi Buddhi Ogam Tama. Krishna gives him the more intelligence. One is sure to achieve results by such activities and attain conclusive knowledge. One is only to carry out the orders of Krishna or his representative and spiritual master. Focused Krishna consciousness. Determined, focused, detached from matter, Krishna consciousness. So then Arjuna is going to ask, tomorrow we shall start reading that. What does such a person look like? How does he act? How does he think? This person who is so fixed and focused and is directly serving Krishna in this way, how do you recognize such a person? So that we shall talk about tomorrow. And we have 2 more minutes. So any questions or comments?
Basically, what means not adjustment? Does that mean like you should work to the best of your ability, but whatever the result comes, you shouldn't get too happy or sad about it?
Yeah, but yes, but there are different levels of working in this Buddha Yoga. One level is that. Another level is deeper. You say, that you understand and you're actually thinking on this, that I'm eternal. What do I have to do with this world? I'm just doing my duties because it's prescribed to me. And another level is that about has more to do with Krishna, that Krishna be pleased. And another level is when one's consciousness is fully and only thinking about Krishna, but doing these things externally, just because it's his duty. And so there's different levels of this consciousness.
Basically, you're not in karma because like material is in your mind. So is that the reason like your mind changes your consciousness?
Yeah, your consciousness. One takes karma, gets karma when one's consciousness is in an enjoying spirit. It's because we want to enjoy the material energy, therefore we get the results, the reactions from that attempt. But if we have no tendency to enjoy it, then it doesn't stick to us, so to speak. So again, there's different levels that we can be in that consciousness on.
You could also perform
temple duties in worldly consciousness too.
Yeah.
So what we want to, those in the temple, if the duties are supposed to be based on mostly hearing and chanting, so that will naturally purify us, because that's called Srup Siddha Bhakti. Those activities have a special potency. But if you're out in the world and say you have a job, you're a secretary, for example. So you can do that in this consciousness that he's described, but the secretarial work inherently doesn't have purifying potency, does it? Well, I don't know. What work are you doing?
Well, at the moment, I'm just kind of finishing off my studies.
Studying.
Studying
material things, they don't have it. It doesn't have a spiritual potency in and of itself. Well, hearing about Krishna's words does. Chanting Krishna's names does. So it's not that the two are equal in a sense, but really, ultimately, it's the consciousness. So how to work in the world? Because look who's hearing this. It's Arjuna. I mean, there's no inherent spiritual potency in fighting and killing your family members like Arjuna had to do, but his consciousness, because Krishna desired it, and he was just surrendering to what Krishna wanted. He didn't really want to do it himself, but because Krishna wanted, he was fully surrendered. He was shooting those arrows, with verve.
I'd always rationalized it because it's Krishna's right there, and that's actually Arjuna.
Well,
but Krishna,
Prabhupada in his purport in the 18th chapter brings up that specific point. And he says one may think that, oh, it's easy for Arjuna because Krishna's right there. But he explains how to do it when Krishna is not there. Same points, though, because it's ultimately comes down to a matter of consciousness. So how to live in the world but not be of the world, this is what's being described. And I'm here, this consciousness is very wonderful. It's very wonderful because of its focus. And what's the focus? It's on the buddhi, on the knowledge. And what's the knowledge? It's on, ultimately, because again, there's different levels it can be on, but ultimately, The highest level is bhajatam priti purvakam. That's where the buddhi comes from worshipping Krishna with devotion, just because I'm Krishna's. Why is the child naturally respect and love the parents? Because they're his parents. There's no more reason than that. You know, you can say, oh, they brought me up, they fed me, they did this. But it's not really that. It's just because they're my parents. So why do we love Krishna? Because we're his, and he's ours. And of course, he's lovable. He's, you know, he does this, he does that, he's beautiful and everything. But he's just, he's Krishna. And we're his servants. Yeah.
It's quite mystifying because, like, what Priyesh is describing is like a sameness in the face of.
What was described?
Priyesh.
Yes.
His question.
Yes.
The platform, you described this different platform, so he's talking of like a point where one is equipoised in the face of happiness and distress, but then as you're describing this at so much of a higher level whereby it will externally appear like someone is very attached or very distressed or Krishna.
Which is a different level again.
Yeah.
That's completely transcendental. This isn't talking about that.
Mm.
This is talking about on the level of doing your prescribed duties,
mm.
not on the level of your ecstatic devotional love of God. This is like the Vedic duties, your duties in the world, so to speak.
But even on a lower level than a point of ecstasy, one may be fully determined in one's activities,
but it's bringing it
to Krishna,
yeah,
and display attachment and distress.
Right, but that's completely different. What this is referring to is one's prescribed duties in the material world.
Right.
But someone who's on a higher level, they have no duties in the material world. They're just
right.
doing everything for Krishna's pleasure.
Yeah.
So the residents of Vrindavan, for example, they're milking the cows. They're making garlands and. And they're very attached to this, and they're very attached to that. But it has nothing to do with what's talking about here. This is talking about someone who's being really governed by the prescribed duties of this world, specifically the Vedically prescribed duties. But because we don't have Vedically prescribed duties,
yeah.
But we do have prescribed duties in relationship to the responsibilities that we do have in this world.
Yeah.
So it's transposed really, but if we don't make the transposition between Vedically prescribed duties to the duties that we have in relationship to the material world, then there's no meaning to the Bhagavad Gita.
Mm-hmm.
There's no purpose to it, for no relevance to it, because it's talking about Vedically prescribed duties here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the culture was governed by the Vedic formulas.
And that's like in between that level of prescribed worldly duties, forming them with detachment, and the highest level, say the residence of Vrindavan, there could be the example where someone is committed to service for Krishna, to build a temple, and is attached to get what's required, the resources required, the manpower required.
Right.
Appears to be attached, appears to be distressed when things don't go according to plan.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what does Krishna see when we do these things? He sees how much, like I'm trying to give a class of the Bhagavad Gita, and say, I'm thinking that I want to remember all these verses and speak nicely so everyone will know what a great speaker I am. So if that's my kind of motivation and I'm going, and I get such a bad class and everyone really must not like me today or something like that. Or I give such a great class everyone must think I'm a... So that type of attachment with me as the center and my pleasure in the center, and that type of distress is is somewhat mundane.
Mm.
But if it's truly, oh, what will be pleasing to Krishna, and then if Krishna's not pleased, I'm sad. And if Krishna's not is pleased, I'm happy. That's that type of attachment to distress, that type of attachment that causes distress or happiness is transcendental.
Mm. Sometimes you start off with the intention to do something for Krishna, and you're pushed in the forms of that service.
And point. Then you find out how superficial your your attempt is, that you know the root of your devotion has not pierced the core of your heart. It's just on the surface. Then you find, then you become humble. And you say, I'm not actually a devotee.
Mm.
I can see that now. I thought I was so advanced, but then when the building started shaking back and forth, then I only thought about myself. I didn't think about the deities.
And also, sometimes you may misunderstand someone who is actually advanced, and they appear to be displaying the emotions of attachment or distress for Krishna.
Right, and therefore we should basically mind our own business, and that our business isn't to judge everyone else.
It's dangerous, it's sort of judgment, isn't it?
Well, it's just not. It's dangerous. It's hard to how do you judge what Prabhupada wants to give the example in Hong Kong. He said, the phone rings, I don't want to talk to him. So I say, oh, I have a bad headache. So, and how do you, no one knows if you, what's going on inside your head, whether there's a man with a hammer and an anvil, or just beating it up, so you say that, so it's very difficult to tell another person's consciousness, and nor is it, generally speaking, it's not our business to do that. What is it to us, unless it's our specific service?
That's the two of discipline.
Huh?
Control.
It's a matter of, again, knowing what your duty is and what it's not.
Mm.
Because usually we think our duty is to judge everyone, you know, this person's like this, and this person's like that, and this person's like this, and this person's like that. It's like the dog whose duty is to protect, you know, bark at everyone who goes past. But who gave him the duty? No one. So we said, do our own service. If our service happens to be to be the judge of every person in the world, then we should do it. But if it's not our service, it's very important to know what our own service is.
Mm.
That's what Krishna will say that later. And not do the service of others.
Can you please specify as to what you meant by your own service? That's a bit, it's like I don't really get what you're trying to say. My service, you know, let's see. It's very general. What is it? Everyone have to be more specific service or?
Well, what is your service? Do you know what your services are?
Depends on the, you know, like.
Do you know what your prescribed duties are, your services? I think you
like
do.
Like I'm a cook, you know, I'm just my
service. You're a cook, you're a father, you're a husband, you're a son, and you know, you're a servant in the, you have certain duties in the temple. Yeah, they're very specific. And there are things going on, and you know, you have a friendly relationship to the devotees here, and friends, you know, the service, and, you know, reciprocal service in that, and you have so many friends that you have a relationship with, and there's always service. Wherever there's a relationship, it's always giving and taking, and that. So you have certain relationship, and you might think I have a service to the devotees in China, for example. I have to do something for them. So these kind of things are our services. But then there's the saving the whole world, and you know, and correcting everyone else. That is probably not our service. You have to correct your own children, maybe. Or, but not everyone else's children, for example. So we do our own service. Krishna says this in the Bhagavad Gita. Shayan sadama viguna paradamas punishitat. To do another service is dangerous. We should know what our services are. It's important to know what our services are and what our services aren't. And then they should be done to please Krishna as much as we practically can. So how to be a mother, a father, a son, a husband, and and the other services you do with the temple. How to do that in such a way that Krishna will be pleased. So there's a way that we think about that, and when there's love for Krishna, it's all those kind of thoughts of what to do are automatic and spontaneous. But it's important to know what our services are and what our services aren't. And then to do them is with Buddhi Yoga. On as high a level as we are. Does that answer your question or not?
Yes.
Okay, but it's getting late. In fact, it already is late. Hare Krishna. So tomorrow we shall continue. Do you remember what the topic is tomorrow? What? Who are in the divine consciousness, whose consciousness is completely fixed and focused in this kind of knowledge while working. But internally they're focused on Krishna. What are they going to look like? Because Krishna said it's divine consciousness. What will they be up to? What will they be doing? How will we tell who they are? Do you know what your services are?
My service?
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
Huh? You're a baby. You're a... You told me. He's so humble. Before he told us who he was, I'm just a baby.
That's all I know.